This is the Future of Digital Art podcast, brought to you by Saatchi Art. This show is dedicated to empowering emerging artists by helping them better understand how they can use technology to expand their art offerings. In each episode, we'll interview successful NFT artists, collectors, and digital art influencers. They'll share insights on how the art world is changing, how they got involved in digital art, art NFTs, the creator economy, and actionable advice that you can use to grow your portfolio and win at the future of digital art. I'm your host, Capucine Jenkins, curator of digital art and NFTs at Saatchi Art. Now let's dive right into the show we have planned for you today. Hey everyone, and thanks for listening to another episode of the Future of Digital Art podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Johnny Wilson, the video remixer behind Eclectic Method. Thanks for chatting with me today, Johnny. Want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. Hi, I'm Johnny, Eclectic Method. I'm a video remix artist, motion graphics artist who makes crypto art.
Great. We're super excited to have you today. Why don't you tell us a little more about your background, your artistic process a little bit, and the work you do?
Yeah, so I started out a bit as a musician, and then after hearing Public Enemy album, I wanted to make sample-based music, listen to sample-based hip-hop. Then I became a DJ, and after becoming a DJ, I saw people doing video DJing, which is like, you know, DJing with the videos, and that dragged me into making my own videos and making mashup videos, just like taking two songs and combining them to create a new song. And from that, I started traveling, being a video DJ, did the MTV Mash show on MTV Europe. So did that for a few years, and then slowly started getting into remixing movies and YouTube videos and memes and basically anything. Any media could be turned into music by treating it like samples and turning it into rhythms or remixing dialogue to rhyme, create new songs. So I did that and did it on the internet and just put videos out, and that led to like a wide variety of like cool work, working with like Motown, collaborating with artists like Chuck D and Donald Glover, like working for bands like U2, making remixes of classic TV shows and movies and stuff for like BBC, Adult Swim. Yeah, and then doing lots of events like remixing movies at the Sundance Film Festival or the Cannes Film Festival or at various events, taking movies and TV shows and content and turning it into like a dance floor show. And then from that, sort of like throughout doing that, just making videos for YouTube, like kind of on the edge of viral meme stuff. And then some of the stuff I'd be doing would like get embraced by the people I'd remix. So I'd remix a movie directed by Edgar Wright, and then he'd get behind it, or Rosario Dawson or Juliette Lewis, or, you know, just people who saw it on Twitter, basically. From all this, had a lot of problems with copyright. I didn't really get sued, but it's really hard to claim the license to these video clips from movies and stuff. Even if you get the support of the film company, it's quite hard for them to license it for like remixes and nightclubs and these other formats. So I started getting into motion graphics and 3D graphics just so I could make my own movie clips, so I could sample myself. And then that kind of happened about the same time I started getting into crypto art. And I guess the last 2 years has been totally focused on the crypto art and the crypto art community and just remixing other people in the crypto art community.
Great. You mentioned earlier that you were initially in a rock band, that you played guitar. How was that transition from, I guess, more of a analog, I don't know if it was electric guitar, but kind of an analog musical experience to more of an electric or electronic one?
Yeah, well, I started playing guitar when I was really young. And I was in a band with like two people who went on to be in quite big rock bands in the UK. But this was like 13, 14 years old. And I guess I loved rock and roll and I loved funk music and I loved all that. But the thing about sampling and making electronic music was the ability to make entire pieces on your own without needing a bunch of other people or other musicians. And, you know, being able to take elements from 60s music and 90s music and synthesizers and, you know, drum music and slow music and classical music and blend it all together. There was something really like endlessly enticing in that for me. And I'm still doing it today, like, you know, 20 plus years later, it's still the most exciting thing.
Oh, very cool. So I guess this is a great segue into asking you what some of your inspirations are.
So definitely Public Enemy, Fatboy Slim, a lot of sample-based music. In terms of video, the artists I saw were called Hex Static and Cold Cut, who made a video called Timber, which was making a song out of like chainsaw sounds and wood chopping, and that was the first like example of video music I ever saw. Mm-hmm. Then they introduced me to EBN, who are Emergency Broadcast Network, who are New York East Coast crew. They did the U2 Zoo TV tour, which was like the first tour to have massive video screens. The video was part of the performance. And so they were like pioneers in that. So that's on the video side. Like, and more recently, it's like hundreds of people, because Crypto, I think, has introduced me to like hundreds of motion graphics artists, photographers, musicians. Yeah, all types.
Yeah, there definitely was a period. I don't know how old you are, but there definitely was a really great period with MTV and VH1, I would say, where they had a very, I would say, robust, like audio visual music video experience that they added to these really popular bands at the time. That I always found that so interesting, that that kind of experience is, I guess, isn't as mainstream anymore. And I feel as if the crypto art space really makes that accessible to people again. Could you tell me a little bit about your time at MTV? Like, you really worked with some incredible pop bands.
Yeah, and that wasn't all MTV. Like, most of that was just via people seeing it on YouTube. But yeah, MTV opened up so many opportunities. Basically, it was me and a bunch of people, video editors, composers, DJs. But the show was making mashup videos, and it was sponsored by Motorola. But it was like one of the most expensive shows MTV put on, because MTV have the rights to use music videos in their entirety. But if they edit them into little bits, they suddenly have to apply for the rights again from every single person. So we had like a huge legal team that were constantly chasing down videos to clear. So it's, if we used a Busta Rhymes song where he sampled a 60s tune, even if we didn't use the 60s tune, that sample had to be cleared. It was like, yeah, crazy legal stuff. So we'd make 10 videos for every one video that went on air, because we had to have the production keep going, but we couldn't wait for the legal team.
Wow, so you're a music lawyer now, right?
I've had my fair share of experiences, but no, I've avoided being sued so far.
You were saying that currently you're a little more in the viral meme space. Could you talk a little more about that? I don't know if our audience necessarily has any familiarity with virality around memes and how that's really influential in online.
Yeah, I think it's like, because what I do is kind of like a mutation of several things. So there's not really an outlet to promote what I do. And as like a DJ, I can't release a song for like a dance floor. I can't put out art in the same way as other people. The sampling itself is kind of illegal, but no one pursues it if I sample something and they like it. So the only real outlet is basically online, and the idea of putting something up online and then people liking it. And, you know, like before crypto, my entire life was people catching one of my videos on Twitter or YouTube and then hiring me to play a show or do a remix.
Wow. Online is great about that. I always feel as if anyone I've spoken to who's been quote unquote discovered online, it's always been a shock to them. Even some of the most talented artists and creators that I've met.
Yeah, it kind of feels like online is the only place now. And it's when you look at successful musicians, which is kind of the only thing I have a lot of experience with, is the kind of record deals they go into are basically borrowing money. And if you look at artists that have succeeded recently, a lot of it's about buying the right kind of attention on the right kind of platforms. And that's also borrowing money. So it's like, at the end of the day, it's the deals people are doing are mostly loans to get their, you know, artistic career started.
How would you describe the state of digital music and audiovisual art today?
I don't really know where digital music is now. I felt like in a weird way, the COVID crisis slowed music down because there wasn't a lot of performances happening. I think the state of digital art in terms of like people that make 3D interactive stuff, digital art of all formats, maybe it's because I'm in the middle of crypto art, but it feels really exciting at the moment. It feels like a bunch of my friends who used to be solely doing corporate jobs now have a lot more free time and a lot of resources they didn't have before, and a lot of other creative people around them that they didn't necessarily like have the connection to before. So like that's like super exciting for me. Like the technology's all changing so fast, all the AI stuff to generate interactive art, to generate 2D art, and that's soon going to be 3D art. And just the amount of technology that's around for like one person to run a digital business from their office bedroom, you know what I mean? It's amazing. It's never been this way.
So you don't see it slowing down anytime soon. I do think there are a number of conversations about possibly this space, people who aren't online chronically, this space somehow disappearing overnight. It sounds as if you see it as only kind of gaining momentum. as the technology develops?
Yeah, I just think, you know, there's going to be a period of downtime. There's going to be people that, you know, pumped in price that won't come back. But that doesn't mean like all the people that are here have disappeared. There's a ton of like coders and creators and people that might have been making amazing money before that aren't making amazing money now, but they still have, you know, that money saved. They still have the resources to make stuff. And a lot of those people, that's all they do, you know, is make stuff. It's like you give enough people the resources to make stuff and something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm, for sure. What would you say? You mentioned issues with copyright earlier. Maybe apart from that, what are the biggest challenges that you face kind of creating video mashups and movie samples?
I think like in the early days, it was education because I didn't go to like professional like establishment to learn video editing or any of that. So when it came to stuff like 3D, learning 3D was really hard in like 2000, 2001. You'd have to learn from manuals or get some sort of video tutorial or something that you ordered online. Nowadays, like a started learning 3D again after 20 years, a few years ago. And it's like everything's online. You can learn how to do, as long as you've got the time, you can learn how to do anything with 3D graphics, with coding, with almost anything. And a lot of it's totally free. So yeah, education in the early time, I think it's the algorithm has been like the big thing of like, if you do a political video, a negative video, something that winds people up, you get a lot of views and it's very easy traffic. Mm. But it's not necessarily like the most exciting thing to be doing. And it's what's like, you know, it's not the happiest thing to be doing. And so, yeah, so the algorithm is really weird. I think also crypto art, the thing that's happened that's really interesting is so much of it is word of mouth. I think very little word of mouth, like art conversations exist in terms of like everyone's kind of guided by the algorithm and you're only shown the stuff the algorithm wants you to see unless you're sitting there and watching it all chronologically. So that's like totally dictated. The art that's been popular, the music that's been popular. And I think something with crypto art is the collectors and the people have been in DMs talking and separating away from that algorithmic thing. And so that's been really interesting to have like a word of mouth art scene. Yeah. So again, the algorithm was a challenge to overcome. And the final thing is just like doing your creative thing against paying the bills and doing corporate work and like how much time do you assign to making the stuff that kind of gets you work, but is also fun and makes your body of work? And how much time do you spend earning money?
I always find it so funny that we think of the internet as being this vast like network of people and avatars and personas. However, the algorithms, which are on these different social media channels, almost localize the people that we talk to and our experiences and the work that we do to where some of the spaces, even though they're online, they're small. If you know this guy, then he knows this guy who knows this guy. You all kind of do the same work. And it's great because, you know, your work becomes more specialized and you learn pretty quickly from these other members of your community. But at any point, do you ever, or any of the people in, I guess, your communities, do they ever feel like maybe they could, I don't know, go into like a new genre or do something else? Does anyone have that desire, even though everything is online now?
Yeah. I think also the thing with the crypto art is people collaborating. I've seen a lot of artists who might have been painting two-dimensional paintbrush artists, you know, who worked with 3D people and being like, oh, I can actually do that. And transitioning and morphing between like different disciplines. I think that's happening loads. And then, like, for me, definitely, like, I think as I've got older, I've realized I could learn a lot more. When I was younger, it seemed like there wasn't, you know, that much access to it.
Yeah. I've noticed that, at least lately, with the initial like NFT boom last summer, I've noticed there hasn't really been a lot of talk about NFT use cases in terms of music. At least it wasn't kind of at the fore because of the Beeple sale and those kinds of like more sexy headlines that were centered around sort of like art NFTs. But I have seen sort of a resurgence of NFTs being used with music. Have you noticed, or is this something that you would be interested in even exploring or figuring out, similarly to art, how, I guess, more analog musicians can use NFTs in their practice, but also to if they're even interested? Do musicians care?
Yeah, I think it's like, the thing with musicians is the one day you've got to learn to like adapt to the MySpace environment, and then you've got to work with Mixcloud and SoundCloud, and then the next thing is getting on Spotify playlists, and that world is ever adapting. So I think it's like just the new thing. But in like musicians who are good at collecting their fan base and making their fans feel a part of a community and interacting with that. And, you know, it takes a lot of time, but it's a business in a way. So some of those people, I think they are already doing really well. And then some people are going to do really well because it's just a better way for a community to buy into the musician they support and, you know, a way to interact with them. Well, I'm one of the most exciting music projects is Song of Days Man's project, where he makes a song every day and he's been selling them away, and everyone buying a piece gets ownership in his career, basically. And they get earnings from the royalties, and they get to make decisions of what he'll do next and publish next and that kind of stuff. And I think there'll be like a lot more of that, and a lot more of kind of, you know, funding films and funding animation projects and funding whole albums like this way. But at the end of the day, it's like you do good. You have to build your audience. But this definitely gives you an easier route to your audience than like having to manipulate Spotify or buy Facebook adverts.
You also mentioned that you've sort of done your own work and worked more corporate jobs. What projects or environments have you not done or worked in that you would like to pursue?
Interactive stuff, games, and those things have always like required such big teams of people and investment. And I'm just like skirting the edge of that now with some projects I'm working on with Metaverse and Unity and Unreal and other people who are coders. Like interactive audiovisual stuff. So a lot of events you go to in like Metaverse now, it's just like a webcam of a DJ with a mixer and people standing around in like a nicely designed environment. What we want to build is people will come into a space and they'll be able to interact with the sound and the visuals and create the performance with the performer themselves. So everything's interactive and playful and fun. So yeah, that's the thing I'd most like to work on that I haven't done before.
Oh, that's great. This is probably a good transition into asking you, do you have any current projects coming up, or what current projects are you working on right now?
Right now I'm working like on a CCO mix, taking a bunch of art that's CCO in the public domain, just because that's been like a lot of the conversation recently. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding it really interesting to like back CCO projects and see what happens if we put time into like making songs about it and remixes about it. The other thing I just mentioned to you is that the audiovisual stuff is going to be like a few more months, but interactive remix video space where you'll be able to go in with your friends and jam. And yeah, just all the time making remixes.
Wow, that's really cool. So what excites you the most right now about audiovisual art?
How easy it is for us to like make quite complex visuals on a computer at home. That speed of technology, the stuff like Midjourney, AI stuff, technology moving so fast. I think it's like everything's moving way faster than people realize, and things, you know, suddenly pop up. Like they announced they mapped all the proteins the other day. And it's like, yeah, we're just moving so fast. And it's every few months, there's going to be a new tool. So I think AI is going to truly make it easier to create characters and 3D and movies and voices and music and everything. The other thing that's like just massively exciting about this whole thing is that we have like a truly global society. And a lot of the people involved in the art, whether the collectors and the artists and everyone, the fans are from all over the world. And it's like a really fun community to be in. And so, yeah, those two things.
So in a year's time, what do you think the future of this space will look like?
I think it's going to go up and down. It's going to go fundamentally up. Everything's going to move faster and cheaper, and more people are going to get into it. And someone's eventually going to come up with a lot easier ways for people to interact with crypto on their phones and safely. I'd like the continuation of the AI stuff is going to go through everything from designing characters to, you know, trading to marketing to writing stories, everything. How everything gets distributed is going to be totally different. I think that's clear right now. And then with the metaverse, I think it all seems a bit silly right now, but slowly there's going to be stuff that pops out that we didn't predict. Metaverse stars, like you have YouTubers and gamers now that we can foresee like 10 years ago, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, with the metaverse, to your point, I think right now there's this understanding of it being a little corny or cheesy or just not sophisticated. And I am curious sort of your vision for what that might look like or what you'd like to see for the metaverse.
Yeah, I think like, you know, people started in Second Life in the mid-2000s. And it was all like people building copies of the real world and apartments. And, you know, you don't even need a foundational wall to hold up a building in 3D. It can all be totally abstract and weird. I think like we're getting away from just replicating the real world in the metaverse and then making truly creative stuff and interactive stuff. because computer games are already there. It's like taking it, those elements of fun and just putting them online for everyone to do together.
Awesome. Last question. So what are the top three pieces of advice you have for artists who are kind of just getting started?
I guess the first thing is like read a lot about what you're getting into. The easiest way is for me has been Twitter. Like you find the artists that you like and share your kind of vibe. And just by following them and seeing who they talk to and learning the kind of things they're into, that's a lot of information, just like constantly learning. I think the crypto art has taught me that community is really important. And I haven't really realized that before because I've always been like on the edges of a DJ community or the film industry, but not properly in it because it's a weird thing. And so, yeah, I think being the power of the community is really important. And then it's like when getting into community, it's about doing the stuff that isn't just selling your art. Like for me personally, it's like I'll make remixes of other crypto artists that are remixing their interviews and their art. And that's just a way for me to like engage with the community without always just trying to sell something. And then the final bit of advice is that enjoying learning all the time. Just there's always new software. You've always got to update your computer and just got to learn all the time.
Great. Those are really good pieces of advice. So that's really all the time we have to cover today. Before we wrap up, if people want to follow you and what you're doing, where can they find you?
The best place is Twitter, Eclectic Method. My website's eclecticmethod.net.
Awesome. Thank you again. And we really look forward to seeing you execute your vision.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, let's keep in touch. Thanks for listening to the Future of Digital Art podcast, brought to you by Saatchi Art. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a rating or review. If you'd like to find out more about Saatchi Art's first ever art NFT collection, The Other Avatars, or to engage with Saatchi Art as an artist, please visit www.saatchiart.com/NFT. Thanks, and I'll catch you again on the next episode.